Welcome back to another quarantine edition of an Investor's Journey podcast. So I've been forced to quarantine even deeper now because summer in Texas, the AC happens to go out in our office. Not very pleasant. So they're actually working on it today and they shut off the power and everything. So can't really do any work in the office. So this is what you see. Fortunately, you're not going to have to see me much longer. We're going to be doing on this episode, we actually have, I'm bringing to you an interview that was done by one of the owners of the Alamo Ria. So as many of you know, I'm the VP of the Alamo Ria. And we set up an interview with a property tax protester. I think that's what they're called. So they're going to be talking about, because May 15th is when the due date is supposed to be for the property taxes, for you protesting them and doing all of that. There are some extensions. There are some things coming around. So we decided to bring this guy on. He's answered pretty much every question. I mean, it's a great, great interview. He covers everything about, you know, how to do a whole protest on your own, what kind of stuff that you're going to need, pictures, documentation, how they evaluate the properties, how they estimate the taxes, what to do with exemptions. I mean, he did a great tip on what happens if somebody has an exemption and they passed away and the taxes never caught up. I mean, that it's a great tip. I don't want to give anything away, but it's a really, really good interview. So if you are a landlord, this is great for you. If you're planning on being a landlord, this is great for you. If you own a home, this is great for you. Because protesting taxes is really something that you should do every year. That way it keeps your tax bill down. It keeps everything more affordable. So we're going to go ahead and I'm going to put that interview in now. So I hope you guys enjoy it. And if you have any questions, anything like that, always feel free to reach out. We're also going to put this the guy's email in our show notes so you can reach out to him with any questions. And I hope you guys enjoy. All right. So share with anybody that you know that that owns properties and they might want to protest their taxes and understand how this works. Make sure to share it with them. Spread the knowledge, spread the wealth. And I'm really excited. And a little bit of housekeeping before we move on is we're still doing our weekly live interviews with, pros from around the industry, seeing how it affected them. Last week, we did one for digital marketing. It's huge. You got to get into digital marketing if you're running a business. Doesn't matter what you're doing. You need to be in it. So I recommend you check that one out. And next week, we actually have a friend of mine coming in for multifamily investing. So stay tuned to that. It's going to be on Tuesday at 6 p.m. We are moving them to Tuesday from Fridays because it just made more sense for a lot of people. So I hope to see you on there. It's on our Facebook page. Jump on, join the live interview, ask questions, participate. It's a lot of fun and it's some good information. So I hope to see you guys there. Enjoy this interview and I'll catch you on the next one.
Welcome everybody. This is a special segment for Alamo Real Estate Investors Association of the Current Impact. And I am super, super excited today because we have a very good friend of mine joining us and, you know, he's going to be educating us on a topic that we don't really talk about until around this time of the year. And then everybody gets very anxious about it and we have a ton of questions on it. So I want to thank everybody for viewing it. This is going to be a pre-recording. And if you have any questions, we'll put some links below and give some email addresses out so you can contact him at a later time. So my name is Sharon Fernandez. I am the past president of Alamo Real Estate Investors Association, and it is my honor to introduce a really good friend of mine, Mr. Ron Noose with NIPO Property Tax Consultant. Good morning, Mr. Ron. How are you?
Good morning, Sharon. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for, joining us on, our Zoom meetings. We've had so many lately.
Yes, it's very, very popular.
It is. And it's pretty convenient, but there's just been a lot lately and we couldn't do a lot of them live. And so we said, let's just try to do a recording on a few of them. And you're going to be one of our first ones we try out. So thanks for being our guinea pig on it.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Ron, can you just start off, introduce yourself, your company, your experience with, you know, how you got into this property tax consulting business, and just, you know, kind of give us, you know, some basic information for us.
Yeah, my name is NICO Property Tax Consultants, and my business partner, Dave Young, and I, we started our own firm about 6 years ago, and what we do is we go and protest properties with the appraisal districts throughout Texas, and most of our stuff is in Bexar County, and I had worked at the appraisal district for about 15 years prior to leaving that and going to working for other firms. And the big thing is for us really to try to help people with their property taxes, because it's such a big issue, especially in Texas with the tax rates being so high. So whatever we can do to help somebody to try to get their values lowered to save money in property taxes is what our aim is.
And I think that's amazing, because I met you a few years ago, and yes, you have saved our company thousands, and I'm not kidding, thousands of dollars in property taxes. And for me personally, you just saved me like probably hundreds of hours and headache of dealing with the property taxes, because we deal with a lot of properties and rentals and trying to get that valuation lower. And it is a, you know, it's a daunting task just to even do one property. And so I kind of want to just go from like a 20,000 viewpoint. Can you explain property protesting and what it is, and kind of give us the general, and we're going to break it down, you know, and go into depth a little bit later, but just kind of give us a general overview of it.
Okay. So with property tax protesting, one of the big dates on valuation is January 1st. That's what your property value is based on, what it would sell for as of January 1st. This year, especially being so much different because of the coronavirus, as of January 1st, that wasn't such a big issue. So this year's values were based on the 2019 sales, and the market was extremely strong. And that's why you're going to see values going out from the Bexar Appraisal District this year with an increase for a lot of properties based on the sales from January, from 2019, based on a January 1st date. And those values should be going out to a lot of the homeowners after the May 15th date. Normally, okay, May 15th is the deadline to protest. When these new notices are sent out to people, they will have 30 days after they were sent out. So if somebody's notice was sent out May 15th, they would have a right around June 15th be the last day to protest their properties.
Right. And so has that been a difference because of the coronavirus and COVID-19 coming out? What's kind of the major impact that you've seen on that? Because I know we were talking earlier and you said that some of them are not going to be getting the notices sent. Well, why is that?
If your property in Bexar County, if it doesn't go up by more than $1,000, they do not send out a notice to you. So if your value stays the same as last year or goes down in value, you won't receive a notice. On those properties there, May 15th is the last day to protest. So if there was a property that you wanted to protest last year and you forgot, and you want to make sure it's protested this year, you want to send in a protest to the Bexar Appraisal District, and you can get the protest form off of their website, bcad.org, and fill that out and send it in. And we're recommending sending in an certified mail before the May 15th deadline. Otherwise, if you get a notice and it's sent to you and your value did go up by more than $1,000, you'll have 30 days after the date that it was sent to you.
Okay.
We have some notices of ours, and May 20th is actually the last day to protest for some of our properties. So we need to make sure we protest it by May 20th, but we will protest probably most of our properties by May 15th, just to cover all the properties that didn't get raised for this year, if there are any on our list.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the protesting process, and we'll kind of dive a little bit into it. Can you give us, you know, kind of the basics of, like, after they've gone and they've filed the paperwork that says, yes, I'm going to go ahead and protest, and we'll go, you know, a little bit deeper in it to later on of, you know, how to get the paperwork ready before protesting. But give us the basics of, like, as I know there's an informal hearing, and there's a formal, and then there's an arbitration. Can you explain those three processes to us?
Sure. The first hearing that you would have would be an informal hearing. In years past, you could go down and talk to an appraiser informally and see if you could resolve your case. This year, we're not sure exactly what is going to happen. We're thinking most of the protest will be handled online or electronically with the appraisal district, unless they open up the appraisal district to have people go down there and meet with people informally. I don't know if that's going to happen this year or not. So we're kind of waiting on guidance from the appraisal district. But okay. The informal hearing is where you meet with the appraiser and you try to get it done with them. And if you can resolve it at that level, then you're done with your protest. If you can't, the next level would be the formal hearing. Once again, in years past, you'd go down to the appraisal district, meet with the ARB board, the appraisal review board, and there's three people independent from the appraisal district, and you present your case to them why you think your value should be lower, and then the district would present their case on why they would justify the value that they sent to you. And then the ARB would make a decision on how they're going to rule on your case. And when they come up with a value, if you don't like that value and you're not satisfied with the ARB decision, then you can file an arbitration, a binding arbitration, and they will send you the form for that. And then, or you can do a lawsuit. And so that would be for bigger values. Most residential properties can be settled by arbitration. And that would be something, like I say, the district would send you the information on that going forward. But if you can settle it formally, that would be much better. And you get what you, close enough value to what you think it should be appraised for.
And the informal and the formal, those are no cost meetings when you have them with the board or the appraiser. But the arbitration, there's a cost to that,
right?
Okay.
Yes, and there's a sliding fee depending on what your value is on your property, to what you have to turn in to the comptroller to be able to file a binding arbitration on that too. And okay. That, like I say, there's more detail that the district would have a kind of on that going forward. The one thing I did notice on the back of the appraisal notices this year, it says indicate how you wish to appear for your protest hearing. And it says by teleconference or by notarized affidavit. So if you want to go to the ARB board, you would have to pick which way you want to go, either do it a teleconference or sending a notarized affidavit with your documentation.
Okay.
And the teleconference too, it does say it has to be notarized evidence, has to be submitted to the formal hearing to the ARB board 10 days prior before the hearing date. Notarized affidavit, if you're just going to send that in and not go to the hearing, but you want your case discussed with the ARB board with the evidence that you provide, that just needs to be given to the ARB board before the date that the formal hearing is scheduled for.
Okay, and they'll send you the notices for the deadlines once you've filed.
Right.
Okay. So we're talking about the, you know, when they've gone and you've gotten your informal or your formal or during your arbitration. So let's backtrack a little bit. When they get their property, what are some of the, because you know, we're a real estate investors association, so Most of our investors are going to be buy and holds, or they're going to be rehabbers that they rehab a property for retail, or they rehab a property for rentals. You know, what can they do to lower their property taxes? What are some of the things that they need to do to, you know, if they're going to go and protest, what's some of the evidence that they need to take with them, or that you would suggest?
Well, one of the things I think that all of the investors need is going to be taking pictures of their properties, and it's, say, close to, based on a January 1st date, and showing that there's repairs needed for it. If you have a recent appraisal on it, or if you have a recent HUD statement of what you paid for, especially let's say you paid a much lower value than they sent out this year for their notice, you definitely want to take pictures of the condition of that property along with the HUD saying, well, the reason you have it appraised for $120,000 and we only paid $70,000 is because of the issues here, and here are the pictures I'm providing along with my HUD showing that the condition of the property justifies what I paid for it. And they would be more apt to change your value to lower it to that purchase price with the pictures. If it's a sale that's done through the MLS system and they have access to that, then usually you can just give them the MLS sale and they're more apt to give you your purchase price if it's been more of an arm's length transaction. But okay. For a lot of investors, if they buy the house and it wasn't listed through MLS and it was a low value or a lower price, purchase price, then definitely pictures or repair estimates would need to be provided to get the district to accept your new purchase price.
Okay, so make sure they take the before pictures and repair estimates.
Yeah.
Okay, and then does the HUD one valuation work, you know, when they're getting their settlement statement?
Yes, the HUD one will work, but going back to, was it listed on MLS, multiple listing service, where everybody had access to buy the property versus buying the property straight from an owner and getting the HUD one, then you need to have documentation as a backup if the purchase price is drastically different from the appraised value that the district has.
Got it. And I'm probably going old school, so I know it's called closing statement or settlement statement now.
Settlement statement, yes.
Right, yeah. Old habits are hard to break.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm trying not to date us. So we're okay. So let's keep moving on. So that's good. So, you know, they've got their valuation, they've got their pictures, they've got, you know, everything that they need to go and protest. One of the things that some of our members brought up is how accurate is the land versus the improvement value? And does that help with the property protesting?
Well, we always look at land and improvements together.
Okay.
So if houses are selling for $200,000 in a subdivision, you're always going to be arguing what is the total value on it too. Now, if they raised your land, doubled your land value, and it's in a floodplain, then that's an issue. Then you can probably argue that my land should be lower. But if similar houses are selling in that floodplain for what they noticed yours on, you can argue the land, but they may lower your land value and raise your improvement value because the market indicates that the overall value is what the sales are in that subdivision too. So whenever we argue a value, we're always arguing the overall value, not looking at just what the improvements are or just what the land value is.
Okay. And then, under the land value, and then also, what does the neighborhood code mean?
The neighborhood code used by the district is usually it's a subdivision, that you live in, and that is where they're going to be taking the sales from and the equity based on similar houses of your size in your area from that neighborhood code. But normally, simplistically, the neighborhood code is going to be your subdivision of where they're pulling the sales from. So if you're looking to get comps that real estate person gives you, you want to make sure those comps are in that same subdivision too, versus comps from a different subdivision or a different neighborhood code. And it makes it tougher for the district to accept those if there's plenty of sales in your neighborhood code or subdivision.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I don't think a lot of people knew that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's important to try to stick, if there are sales in your area, to your area, instead of going 3 miles down the road to a different subdivision that does show your value should be lowered. Usually the district is not going to use that as an accurate estimate of what your value is worth.
Right. So basically just doing the correct comps in the correct area.
In the correct area, yes. Very important.
Yeah. We do try to teach that to maintain with our members. And so I think we've drilled that in their head plenty of times, and Ray has a whole class just on how to do comps the correct way.
Correct.
Okay. And okay. So speaking of the neighborhood and they're purchasing the properties and they're looking at, and we're dealing with investors for our platform. Some of them have the labels on it. And I just kind of want you to briefly touch on it. I know a lot of our members already know, but for those that don't know, maybe some of the exemptions that are going to be part of when they purchase a house, like the disabled, over 65, vet, homestead. When they get those exemptions, and these, you know, of course, are discounted, and correct me if I'm wrong, discounted prices for the property taxes, and they stay on this property, but the next year it's going to get, what do they do if the city recaptures?
If they bought a property, let's say in December, any exemptions on the property as of January 1st would be removed too. Sometimes there are a homestead or over 65 on a property, but if the owner says, I'm going to take it off my property and move it to a different property, even though it was there after January 1st, it could be taken off too. And the person would pay, you know, more taxes on the property. But as far as what exemptions stay on and when they're taken off, that's more of a question that would be directed toward the appraisal district too. Because sometimes there's exemptions on there, and once after the closing, for some reason, they get taken off, and the taxes now are much higher in October when the tax statements go out too. So what I would always look at, those exemptions may stay on the property, but I would look at them as they're probably not going to stay on the property too. And if they do and you get a discount, that's great. But you want to look at what would my taxes be as of October if I didn't have the exemptions. And if you plan it for it that way, you're going to be better prepared for any increase in taxes, if there are any.
Okay, so basically, I think what you're saying is, can we go to, instead of going to the property tax assessor website to get the property tax value, usually I know my office, we go to the Bexar County Appraisal District, bcat.org, and we look at what the property taxes are without exemptions. And we base our numbers on that, you know, as much as we can, because we know it, you know, it could fluctuate. Is that the way to do it for what you're seeing?
That's the way that I would look at it. If I can budget my taxes based on not having any exemptions on the property, then I'm prepared as of October to what I'm going to pay in taxes, versus if somebody has an over 65 and they're only paying $500 in taxes on their property and the real tax bill should be $3,000 And now that over 65 gets removed, and especially if the district finds out that that person has passed away and it never should, that exemption should have been removed 2 years ago, that could be an issue also. They could go back on taxes. And that's why a lot of times if you go through a title company, if they can research what exemptions are on there and should they be on there, that can solve a lot of headaches come October if they take off the exemptions or go back years because a person was never entitled to those exemptions.
Wow, that's very good information, especially for a lot of new investors. That's why the title search is so important. And, you know, just that, because that has happened to our office, and it has happened to a few of our members where, you know, they've gone back a few years because they were passed away and they've had to, you know, they've got to roll back the taxes. And, you know, correct, all of a sudden you think it's a, you know, maybe $1,000 tax bill. And no, it's a, you know, $10,000 tax bill. And I think that's a really good negotiating power, because then now you've got to go back to the seller and say, you know, we didn't expect this to be a $10,000, you know, property tax bill. This has to get paid. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to move forward with this sell. So that's pretty powerful, Ron. Thank you for mentioning that.
It's something to be aware of, especially a homestead exemption is worth probably $200 to $300, you know, a year. That's not as devastating as if you have an over 65 on it and the person passed away, because taxes are always attached as a lien against the property. They're not attached to the owner. And so if taxes aren't paid, they can come and foreclose on the property. So you need to be aware of what your tax liabilities are. But if you plan for tax liability based on no exemptions on my property, then you would be covered in October when the tax statements go out.
That's really good to know. And then, so let's go on the opposite realm. If we're overcharged for the taxes, you know, is there a way to go back and just make sure that we get the correct lower amount of the taxes for the previous year? I know sometimes the tax office will refund.
Right. If there's a clerical error on the appraisal district side, for instance, if they say there's a house on a property and it was removed the year before and they left it on when you get your tax bill, they left it on for that year, you can ask them to go back and remove that house and they would make a correction. Usually they look at an aerial photos to see that the property is not there anymore, and they can make an adjustment for you. But as a generality, most of the time, if you just say my property was over appraised last year, it's too late to protest for back years. They will make an adjustment based on a clerical error, but not as on a valuation error.
Okay. And that's really good to know too, because I don't think a lot of our members know that, because they're purchasing their first property, they're doing their first investment. So this is all really great information. And I'm super excited about it. So my inner nerd kind of comes out with this stuff. One of the few people that'd be like, let's talk about property taxes and see what we can do, and valuations and data.
it's about saving money, you know, whatever you can do to save money. And one of the things I always talk about too is looking at the appraisal data that they have on the properties that you're buying to make sure all the improvements that they have listed there. They may have a swimming pool. That swimming pool was filled in 2 years ago, so it's not there anymore, but nobody ever told the appraisal district, I'm filling in my pool. So now they're still carrying that value on there. So it's important that you look to see what they have on your property, that the square footage is correct on it. The thing to remember in square footage is that they always measure from the outside of your house, not from the inside, but from the outside, or in a commercial building too. They always measure from the outside as far as getting measurements.
Wow, that's another good tip. Okay, so let's keep moving on with the process of protesting the taxes. So, and this is all good information, because this is stuff that they're going to need and know about, so they can save money on their property taxes in the future. And they also know if they get overcharged, or if they feel like the property taxes went up, you know, too much in value, what they can do to alleviate some of that pain of, you know, paying such a high property tax. So what I'd like to know from you is, when they're protesting their property taxes, when is a good, when should somebody protest by themselves, or when should somebody hire a property tax consultant like yourself?
I think for a lot of people, especially on residential property, for commercial property, we always recommend somebody hire a consultant. Just because of what data that the district needs, and you don't want to give them the wrong information on your property with commercial property. But sticking with the generality of residential property, it gets down to time. If you have the time to go down to the appraisal district and sit down there on one property in half a day, and that, and you don't mind doing it, then, you know, I would say go ahead and do it. But, you know, if you've got a lot of properties and you don't have time to sit there and go down and talk to the appraisal district, you know, week at a time, settling your values, then you shouldn't do it. I mean, you know, then you should hire a consultant. But on residential property, if you want to, you know, like I said, if the person wants to do it themselves, it's pictures, it's, you know, repairs, estimates, closing statements, stuff like that, as far as doing that too. And then we can see what the process is. Some people don't like the process, because it can be a combative process too. And some people just don't want to do that too. Then they can hire a consultant on it too.
That's really good to know. And I know for our office, you know, we have a lot of properties. So time for us, it was a lot of time. So I'm just super grateful that you were able to, you know, take us on as a client, because I know you're very busy. We almost didn't get you last time. And I love the fact that you said, you know, the evidence of what they need to take, and, you know, for somebody that's starting off, or maybe even a seasoned investor. So I just kind of want to recap in our head. You know, the pictures are very important. What else did you say? The pictures, the closing statements.
Yeah. If you have any appraisals on the, you know, the property too. But I think for a lot of investors, a lot of their properties, it's condition issues. And that's what needs to be shown to the appraisal district, is what condition my property is in, especially rentals. Some districts actually give a rental discount on their properties. Bear does not. If you tell them it's a rental, you're still going to get classified as if it's an owner-occupied house, and compared to those sales too. So it's important to show the condition of your property to the appraisal district.
Wow, that's amazing. And you work in Bear County, but you also work outside of, in some of the surrounding counties as well too. Is that correct? Okay.
Surrounding counties, Guadalupe, Comal, and the ones that kind of touch Bear, we will do more we will do residential in those two. We have residential properties. When we get past that, we'd like to have commercial properties. We don't want to be doing a residential house, one residential house in Dallas. It's just we won't get to that district to meet with somebody, you know. In a commercial property, we have better connections to do commercial property, those outlying counties. But surrounding counties, we do have residential properties.
Okay. And Ron, just to, you know, kind of wrap up everything here, you know, there's been so many changes, just, you know, generally because of the COVID-19. I know we touched base on it, you know, with that. How do you see next year going with the property tax values, this year and next year? Can you touch on that again?
Well, going back to the way it is this year, as of January 1st, COVID-19 was not an issue as big as it is now. So that's why the district sent out the values at a higher value, a lot of them, based on the sales in 2019. Now, looking even at 2020, the values are still going up for real estate. It hasn't really slowed down. It's still a strong market. Now, people aren't going to look at houses as far as showings and visiting houses, but with so much stuff being online, they're still buying houses and people are getting close to, you know, what their asking price is on it too. So I don't know what the district is going to do next year. I think it just depends on, as of January 1st of next year, what the market looks like. But right now, with the market still going up, you know, there could be an increase next year too, but, you know, there may not be. It's just, that's kind of a fluid thing with the COVID-19 pandemic, and hopefully we'll be able to know closer to that too. This year is just going to be a challenge because if they don't open the district later on to have people go down there and try to settle their values, it's going to take a while because everything's going to have to be handled electronically or through an email sending in information.
Wow. Yeah. So it's a bit of a challenge for all of us, but I'm sure you and I will.
Everybody says we know we're going to get through it. So yeah. I wish everybody the best out there, and just, you know, all we can do is try to do our best, and hopefully people that do protest your properties, just, you know, send in the information that the district needs. And if you don't get what you want informally, that value, you think it should be lower, then go to the formal hearing, whether it be by notarized affidavit or the phone telephone conference method. If they aren't going to have in-house hearings, ARB hearings, and like I say, we just don't know if that is finally going to happen or not.
Right. So there's still a few questions that are up in the air, and you know, Ron, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day, because I know you're, you know, we've got a lot of stuff that we sent you to get working on. Yes. And you are, you know, I'm super grateful that you're able to do this for our Ala Maria members. I know you have a few of our clients, you know, a lot of our members are your clients. And So I am, you know, extremely grateful that, you know, you're able to do this morning with us. And so let everybody know if there's an email address that they can contact you with, if they have a couple of questions. And I know you're going to get into your busy season right now, so maybe next year.
Protested most of our stuff. We're going to protest, like I say, probably be right around May 15th. And I know we're going to be busy starting off right away with those too. But my email address, probably the best way to contact me, is going to be Ron, R-O-N dot, and then NYCO, N-Y-C-O, N-Y-C-O at sbcglobal.net. And that'll be the best way to contact me. And going past this May 15th deadline too, I'm not sure how many clients we'll be able to pick up for this year, but if anybody has a question, you know, just definitely let me know, and I'll try to respond back to you through email the best I can.
Absolutely. Ron, thank you so much for being on the call this morning with us, and, you know, taking, you know, some time out of your day and working with me on the technology side of it and dealing with, you know, everybody at home and dogs and crazy stuff. So I can't wait to see you in person in the office again whenever we are able to open back up. We're shut down until it's safe for everybody to go. But we're working. I think we're working more now than we actually did when we were in the office. But that's just my opinion. Thank you so much. And guys, this is Ron Noose with NYCO Property Tax Consultant. Again, email address is ron.nyco@sbcglobal.net. Did I get it right?
Correct. Awesome.
I have you saved in my email, so I kind of remember because I'm always emailing you. And he'll answer the questions if he can. And then what we'll do also is we'll provide a link I believe we're going to have some, I think it's the Facebook members page. So if there's questions that you have, please go to the alamaria.org on Facebook, like it. If you're a member, make sure that you join. If there's questions that you have for Ron, go ahead and put it on that page, and we will make sure to get those questions to him if you didn't get his email address, or there might be somebody that's on that platform already that may know that answer. So thank you guys for joining us. You guys have a great and safe day, And we will see you on the next Current Impact with the Alamo Real Estate Investors Association. Ron, thank you so much. You take care. Thanks. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye. Stay safe.
Thank you.